Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and alongside me in cyberspace making a lot of noise is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
It's not me making the noise, man. Hey, John, how's it going? Okay. I know how it's going. You don't even have to answer that. The Dragons have won again.
I'm a professional. I'm going to look at this at a, you know, in a rational manner.
Woohoo!
Anyway, this is week 31, man. Can you believe this?
Yes, I can believe it.
like
although I can believe it because I wasn't here for two of them. So.
Hey, Junko, man. You know, that's a lot of shows.
That's a lot of shows.
And, you know, by the time we do the next show, the season's going to be over.
It will indeed. Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
It's been a good one, and it's getting more and more interesting as it goes along.
And that's what we're going to talk about this week. We're going to talk about the first two games of the Japan series. We're going to discuss an interview with an old-school Yomiuri Giants slugger named Warren Cromartie. And we got some other things to do, so let's start clearing the bases. All right. So
all right.
We got this. We both got this series wrong. We both predicted Hawks in five. So
I'm not ready to say we're wrong, but we're off. Well, we're gonna be wrong in a. Although we could be as wrong as wrong in 3 days.
4 days, but anyway, I guess 3 days. Yeah, I can't see a sweep going happening.
I can't see it either. But it's a possibility.
I didn't see. You know, two games like this. Now, as we talk, I'm gonna look on TBS because I wondered about it right away. Two extra inning games, or two 10-inning games with the exact same score, with the road team winning in a Japan series. It's got to be a first.
Well, yeah.
You know,
and with indeed. Well, all we're missing is that Yoshimi. Well, and then we had the closer giving the same guy giving up the decisive run in the 10th inning twice.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate for him. And, you know, I want to talk about game two first, and then we'll talk about game one. We won't go chronologically, but we will go with the newest news. Now, Masahiko Morino put the Dragons up 2-1 in the 10th with a single off Takahiro Mahara of the Hawks. But you know what? In that spot, I was thinking, you know, why don't you go to Morihuku? This is a great spot for him. You got a left-handed batter. It really doesn't hit left-handed pitchers. This is a really good spot to make a move here if you're ever going to make a move. I mean, it is the Japan series. This is not a regular season game. Who cares who cares about people's feelings at this point?
Well, I don't think it's a matter of caring about people's feelings, but if you go to Morihuku now, then you're out Falkenberg, you're out Mahara, and you're out Morifuku because he's not going to pitch the 11th inning.
Well, you know, the way it turns out, you were out of the game because there was no 11th inning because
True. You
left Mahara in there. I think you got to get – I understand you want to get to the 15th inning. You have to think 15. There is no time rule. You know, they played the whole season. It's a big adjustment, I think, for these managers. Now, going back to, you know, regular style 15-inning limits or 12-inning limits even, where there's no clock involved.
Right.
But I really think you have to get to the next inning to start, you know, and worry about, you know, the 15th inning when you get to the 15th inning. And I looked at the way some of the managers managed in the CLCS and the PLCS first and second stages, and right. I saw a little bit of that happening. You know, I'm thinking, yeah, I would want to keep my closer in a good frame of mind for the rest of the series. You're going to need him. Obviously, you're going to need him. But, you know, that's the perfect spot to bring in a lefty specialist, and he didn't do it, and he got a pitch.
I was thinking with an off day, and as well as Falkenberg's been throwing, keep him out there for another inning.
I thought about that as well. I don't know why they felt they had to make a move at that point either, The thing is, and like I emailed you as soon as, you know, the inning was over, I said, well, Iwase has to go through the top of the order, and, you know, any of those guys get on against him, then he's going to be facing right-handed batters, and, you know, Uchikawa and Matsuda. And I thought, well, you know, that's maybe the matchup they're comfortable with, and so maybe they're feeling like they're going to get a run. and they didn't worry about it. But I certainly was worried about it. I thought Morifuku was going to come in. They didn't even go out to visit Mahara on the mound. And I thought that was kind of a mistake. I would have yanked him and used the bullpen. I think that was a mistake by a guy who hasn't been in the Japan Series yet in Koji Akiyama. And again,
he hasn't managed in the Japan Series.
I'm sorry,
he's played a lot of them.
But that, I mean, yeah, on the bench in this
right.
particular circumstance. No, he hasn't been on the bench in the Japan Series, and I'm sure the Japanese reporters will ask him about that. But I certainly wanted to know right away. That's immediately what I thought about after the game. Morino got a good pitch to hit outside, and he went with it. And Masahiro Araki did a good job running to get home because the outfield was pinched in, like it normally is in Japan with two outs.
Still, there wasn't, with two outs, getting a good jump, and the ball was not hit that hard.
No, it wasn't.
That he was, there was going to be a question about it. So with his speed, it's hard to believe he's 34. Or 36? 34.
Yeah, Ibata is older, yeah.
He's 36,
according to
yeah.
your story the other day, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was according to the Omiuri. So
yeah.
They're never wrong.
Yeah.
So, he's 34 and still moves well and, got it done. That was his first hit of the series and to get on base and Ibata drawing a clutch walk and Mahara just kind of losing the plot again, although it was a lot quicker than last in game one where he lost the plot after he got two outs.
Yeah. Oh, was it two outs? I thought it was a one-out home run. I was going to mention that. But, now his psyche is kind of, in question. And I thought if there was any weak spot in that bullpen, that he was the guy. But he actually, he had injuries and he had poor performances and they sent him down in the minors early on in the season because of poor performance. Then he ended up getting hurt and he only had 18 saves and he didn't really pitch a whole heck of a lot compared to what he had been doing in past seasons. So this is kind of an off season for him, and I was a little bit shocked, to be frank, that they said they're going to make him the closer and they're putting him in the closer role because he really didn't pitch that way this year.
Hmm. Well, he did. It's just that he was, they had that, he had that summer vacation.
Is that what you want to call it now?
Oh. Well, from July till I guess it was about 4 weeks. And other than that, they brought him back and he was pretty much back in the order. It wasn't, I don't think it was like they were taking him out or, giving him a different role.
Well, no, they didn't. Not every time was he out there, closing games when they, early on in the season. When they brought him back, yes. Yeah. Yeah. They put him back at the back of the bullpen and they said, do your thing. And, he's not bad. he did some really great work. His whip on the season was 102. 1.02. So, it's not like he's bad, but in 29 innings, he threw 30 games, 29.1 innings, he gave up 23 hits and 7 walks. So that's a lot of base runners. He struck out 30, which is great. But he lets people on base, and when you put people on base, especially in a playoff situation, they have a tendency, there's chances for them to come home. And the Dragons, they did a good job. The first day they got a home run, probably from a guy he didn't really know how to handle and what to throw to him. today it was just, they strung some hits together, which is really rare for the Dragons because I think I told you before, I see them as like a moped a moped on the freeway. You have enough speed to get into trouble, but when you need to get out of trouble, you don't have that speed. They can get guys on base, they just have trouble getting them. The cross home plate. They don't have enough oomph. But they managed to do it tonight. Now, really shocked.
I don't think the criticism of Mahara is really all that. There's really not much to criticize him. From looking at the numbers.
Right.
The only thing that I would you could think about is, okay, well, how did he do at the end of the season? And was he particularly effective? I don't know. I mean, he looked fine in the play. He looked okay in the postseason. He looked okay at the end of the season. I didn't see any cause for alarm. Do you think he was pitching? Was that bad tonight?
I didn't think his, you know, I looked at his fastball, and it had speed, and he had velocity, but he didn't seem to have a good tail on it. It was straight. But the pitch that he threw that got hit, it looked like a two-seamer,
right.
Seam fastball, but I'm going to look it up as we're talking here. But, you know, it was breaking away from left-handed batter Moreno, and he went with it, you know. He likes to pull a lot of pitches, but when he's going well, when Moreno's going well, yeah, that's what he does. Right. He hits to all field. And, you know, if you see in fact, I'm on Yahoo right now, you can see how far this ball is breaking almost out of the strike zone. And he put a good swing on it, and like you said, he hit it hard enough to get it out of the infield, but not all that hard.
Right. Well, I mean, I just, now, has Mahara been, he hasn't been invincible, but he's been good enough that if it's me, yeah, I do exactly what I'm doing. Now, the other hand is it's in a tie game, and I've got a day off. I'm bringing Falkenberg out for another inning. Now, that's, you know, that's second-guessing the manager, but that's what I thought at the time. I was kind of surprised, especially after Ochiai had success with, you know, bringing a Sal out, you know, stretching a Sal's innings a little bit.
Because he knows there's a day off on Monday, and, you know, and a Sal
knows. They both know there's a day off on Monday. This isn't exclusive information that only Ochiai has.
Right, plus, thank you for that. And, you know, they had a long break between, you know, the end of the season and their first game in the CLCS second stage, where Asao didn't have to throw every day like he, you know, he appeared in a club record 79 games over the regular season. I think it was 79, but you know, they had that rest, they had that break period, and so I think they think, you know, hey, you're gonna be pitching every day anyway, and yeah, like you said, stretch him out. I think, you know, whenever they have a chance, he'll be going as many outs as he can get,
right.
And I think the same should be done with the Hawks bullpen. And you saw the way Falkenberg just overmatched everybody. Why take him out? He's firing.
That's what I was thinking. And
it's rare that you see Tony Blanco swing at three fastballs that he gets a great swing on and doesn't connect on any of them, and they're right there over the plate. It's not like
he's
fooling him. He's just, hey, here it is. See if you can hit it. And Blanco couldn't hit any of them.
So yeah. So I'm. That's my only complaint there. Now, the other question I think that we have to get to the Hawks is, what's up with their first base situation?
Well, you know, I thought that was weird, too, and I was going to mention that later on, but I'm thinking, you know, they're doing things differently from what they did in the regular season. Now, I understand that, you know, part of it, you want to go with who's hot, and you want to do something a little bit different from the last time the teams saw each other.
Well, they're doing something a little different than anybody who's ever seen the Hawks before.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what did you analyze that?
Let's get stupid. I think what happened is I think Koji Akiyama spent too much time watching the Swallows games, and he sort of figured, I'm going to do stuff that is completely unpredictable and inconceivable, and let's go from there. Let's try to confuse the Dragons. Almost worked for Yakult. We're stronger than Yakult, so let's, you know, let's look, I don't know what, let's roll over and play dead. Let's play Fukuda, who's a player I love, at first base.
Yeah, an outfielder by trade, am I correct?
Yeah. I don't know. I have seen him play first base a little this year, but why Fukuda and why not say Jose Ortiz?
Or, you know, put Fukuda in the outfield. I mean, you know, the guys they're playing are not the guys who necessarily got them there, although Fukuda did have a good last month of the regular season. But
I love getting him into the games if I'm the general manager and thinking about what's going to happen next year. But on the other hand,
right, when you're not going to pay all these foreign players to sit around on the bench and collect money.
I mean, okay, now they Alex Cabrera sat, didn't play at all today, and he came in as a pinch hitter in the first game. Now, that makes sense after we saw him in the climax series as a, you know, a order. He was, you know, that you've heard the expression tailor-made double play. Well, Alex Cabrera had his needle and thread out there because he was the tailor sewing them up.
Yep, yep. And it's not he's a bad hitter. It's because he's got a bad wheel. And
he's got
a bad hamstring, and it really hampered
right.
him.
So you really don't want him in the starting lineup where there's going to be somebody on first base ahead of him and one out.
No.
You want to save him for those two outs or nobody on base or some kind of situation where, you know, he can start something or finish something. But anyway, so he's not there, but Jose Ortiz is. Matsunaka's there. Now, Matsunaka can't run the bases, really. He's also got some problems. They're saying on TV he can't slide.
yeah, we were watching different feeds. Now, I was watching NHK while you were watching regular TV.
Tokyo.
Yeah. So I didn't hear that. But, I mean, he's not 100%, but he can certainly swing. He was swinging out of his heels in game one when he came on to pinch hit. But
he had a wonderful walk as a pinch hitter tonight.
Yep.
And that was crucial to the Hawks tying the game.
Yep. Yep. That was the run that came in. Yeah.
They had, as much as, you know, we can criticize the little things, and Mahara might be the biggest thing you can really look at, although I have to think playing Fukuda as your first baseman,
mm-hmm.
to me, he's like playing like a Central League manager on one of these teams that doesn't have a DH.
Yeah,
he's actually a better player than the fellow I'm about. You know, it sounds like I'm demeaning him. And I guess, you know, he was a lower level marginal journeyman, Junichi Gino, who was the Dragons' DH for much of the 1999 series against the Hawks.
Ugh.
I mean, this is a team that had a little more going for it, but these teams, they don't know what to do with a DH, and it's like Akiyama. It's like all of a sudden somebody says you've got a DH today, and he doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, yeah. It was weird. It was weird that he was doing that. I think the good thing that he did was put Matsuda in the cleanup spot, Nobuhiro Matsuda.
Yeah.
He's their leading home run hitter. I think he had been batting sixth or seventh most of the season.
Most of the season. Well, that's when it proved that he was having the best hitting, you know, when it was beyond a doubt that he was having the best hitting season of any of the Hawks players.
Right. And I think they said on TV on the feed that I was watching that he had hit in 18 games, he'd hit .390 in that position, but
I heard that that as well, and I think, okay, yeah, that's fine. There's a theory, but I think the Hawks were very measured in how they used him. I mean, it was clear early on he was having the better season, but that, again, doesn't mean he's the better player.
Exactly.
I think they put him in the fourth spot when they felt comfortable to say that he was, in fact, that in their opinion, in their measured opinion, that he was the best hitter they had for that position.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows a lot of restraint because some managers will decide their lineup in batting practice.
Right.
So that one I'm okay with. And I like. Let's talk about peculiar choice. I guess this is the first, really, the second peculiar, the choice of game two for Mr. Akiyama was. You have a chance to tie the game.
What inning are we talking here?
I'm going to have to go and check back here. You have a chance to tie the game, and you have. Let's see now. We are do 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 do.
Are you going to look for the Tamura bunt?
Seventh inning. Yes, the Tamura bunt.
Yeah.
Okay, Hitoshi Tamura is a guy who had a famous bunt in the sacrifice bunt in the 2006 WBC semifinal victory over South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, he said, the first time as a professional he ever got down a sacrifice bunt. And he bounced it off the plate. And it bounced so high that the runner was able to advance.
Beautiful job.
So it was a freak show bunt. He had had a couple of other sacrifices, but he said that they were essentially he was bunting for a base hit and didn't get the first, you know, and the runner advanced as well, and they gave him a sacrifice. And he's had two sacrifices after that, when he joined the Hawks in 2007.
And, tonight he looks so uncomfortable trying to square up.
This could have been his, I'm guessing, this was his second career sacrifice bunt attempt. He's never done it in the regular season.
Well, they said he had six.
Well, he's had sacrifices,
Okay.
And they kept talking about, well, he hasn't sacrificed all year. Duh, he hasn't sacrificed in 4 years, dude.
Yeah, go back.
And I'm guessing that he was trying to beat out bunts.
Exactly. He wasn't like a straight-up sacrifice. He was just trying to get on base with a bunt.
This could be his second career attempt to sacrifice. And it actually worked out as well as it did against South Korea, because once they had two strikes on him, they took off the sacrifice and he nailed the pitch.
And again, that's in the inning where they score. They end up scoring, and he, it was a leadoff single by Yuya Hasegawa, and then he comes up and singles in the left with two strikes on him. They get the bunt down with the next batter, Fukuda, and then Yoshimi comes out. No, I'm sorry. Matsuda walks. Yoshimi comes out, and then Asao can't get Kawasaki, who takes him into right field with a strong single. But that was their only run of the game. Honda grounded out. They got the run at the plate, and then Uchikawa grounded out our friend Tony Blanco using his glove.
That looked like it was going to be two runs. Came off the bat, he could have cleared the bases with that. If Tony Blanco doesn't save the day.
Yeah, normally when a ball's hit that hard to the right side, I just think it's going to go right through Tony Blanco. So.
Well, that's a tough one. Tony's pretty solid, so. Don't tell me we are going to discuss Tony Blanco's holes. Because,
okay.
Tony, we love you.
Moving right along.
Man, you made the plays. Good for you, bro.
Hey, you got it done. You got it done. And they won game two by the same score, 2-1, as they won game one. Now let's talk about game one a little bit. Another extra inning game, 10 innings. And the weak hitting Dragons get two home runs to win the game, and the Hawks don't get any. And we would expect that would be the other way around, that two solo home runs from the Hawks would be enough to win a game against the Dragons. The guy who gets it is a guy, or gets the game where, actually, let's go to the first home run, because the Dragons were down in the game. It was 1-0, and Kazuhiro Wada hits a home run, and what did we say? That was his sixth.
That was his sixth in Japan series, and I think this is his sixth Japan series, or his fifth, 2004, his fourth Japan series, that might be right, although he might have played against the Bay Stars in 1990, he might have played against Tanishige in 1998.
Way back in the... You have to get in the way back machine for that one, huh? The Bay Stars. Wow. That's
When he was still a catcher, he had a big home run that helped the Lions win the Pacific League Championship in the dying days of the season. There.
Right. Now, I have to apologize to Chen Weiying, because I always badmouth him, and he did give up the first run, and it was a tough game, and he gave up that first run in the fourth inning to the Hawks, and then something happened. I mean, he relaxed, it seemed, and he said, if they get another run, they're already up. I can't do too much more damage. And he pitched strong for eight innings, and he didn't get the win.
He snapped back every time everything looked like it could have gone against him. He just, pushed the reset button, and he was on his stuff again. He was executing his pitches again.
Yep, I apologize to him. He pitched eight innings, one run. then Masaaki Koike, a guy who I wrote a story about earlier this season, because he was doing so well as a starter, and the Dragons decided to, that they had enough of their part-time guys, the guys who they were courting out there as a sort of platoon, mm-hmm. trio in the right field. I'm sorry, center and right. They just stopped and they said, "Look, Kweke, you just go out there every day and you're going to play against right-handers and left-handers." And he, for a good month, he had a really good stretch and he had a good season. And it's kind of no surprise that he came out of nowhere have a single and then a home run. And when the home run comes off the closer in the 10th inning and wins the game. So, the Dragons, the first game, OGI came out and said, this is how we win. You know, we win these close games. And, they won two of them. And if you're not...
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, I mean, if you're not ready to play in high-pressure situations where you need to get bunts down or you need to make plays in the infield or the outfield, or you need to make pitches, and this is what I saw tonight, actually. Just before Sugiuchi gave up that run, I thought, what the Dragons do is they keep putting up those zeros, and it just makes you go out there thinking, God, especially a team like the Hawks that's used to scoring, when are we going to get a run? And, I can't keep doing this all night, is the kind of mentality you start to have. And
as he said, the Dragons are more used to that, and the Hawks aren't.
No, they're not.
I think half the battle is has been their sort of surprise that this is. I think the Hawks have this... this is an interesting situation here. This series is looking like it could turn out like a copy of the 2002 Japan series, in which the Lions had a big hitting team and they faced the Giants, which was also they were very competitive. They were very evenly matched, but the Lions just like fell. They didn't get into any 10-inning games because sort of like the first play, the second play of the game went against them, and that was like the series was over. They had a bunt play with the Kazuo Matsui on first, and Abe, it was a poor bunt, and Abe threw down to second and forced the Matsui Kazuo at second base, and the series just got out of control from there. And it was like a case of a manager. I don't want to say this, that Akiyama is suffering from severe, a streak of dumbness or anything, but that happened to the Lions, that the manager was doing everything wrong and the team sort of started doing everything wrong and everything. It went from bad to worse.
Yeah, this is the thing I saw in game one when Tsuyoshi Wada was out there and, he had the one run lead, but he's like, man, I'd like to see us get some more runs. It looked like I could see the expression on his face was a little bit of mental fatigue.
Right.
It's not that the Dragons have this lineup that's going to tear you up, and he had thrown, no hit ball for six innings.
But he threw, and I mentioned this to you because we were watching the game in the office, that although he had not given up any hits, and I think, to be honest, I think Chen outpitched him. I think he made Wada made more mistakes than Chen did, and the Dragons took advantage. The Dragons missed a lot of them.
Yeah. In fact,
more fastballs up in the zone that they were just looking at, and they were not. They were just looking at. They were looking at a lot of pitches that they could have whacked. His control was not that sharp. His fastball was good. His slider was as good as usual. And I think Wada said his velocity was quite good, but he was missing a lot of locations. And Chen he made his share of mistakes, but he didn't have runs of bad pitches like Wada did.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing that they didn't get a hit through six innings. It was a lot of good luck on his part.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned when we were at the office watching the game, I said, the Dragons are getting pitches to hit. They're just not – they're fouling them off or they're watching them zip by. That same couldn't be said for Chen. He made fewer mistakes in terms of, location. But, it's not about putting up or matching. And this is what I said in the office. You don't have to match pitch for pitch. You just have to match zero for zero.
Right.
The point
being that, and again, is that if you try to consistently execute, and in the end result, it wasn't that surprising to see Chen keep up with him because he was executing better.
Right.
And the dragons and the Hawks hitters, I have to call them about even.
I don't know what to call them, but I want to look at the rest of the series now.
I've ended the first game.
Okay.
All second right. game too. I think there wasn't. You know, this is the game. These are the games the Dragons had to win, because, you know, if one of these games is 6-0, the only way it's going to be a 6-0 Dragons win the Dragons have is if the Hawks give up after it's 3-0 in the top of the ninth inning.
Right.
And the Dragons tack on 3 consolation, you know, just bonus runs.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. But let's look at the series going forward now. Game 3, I'm looking at maybe Nelson. They said I read somewhere that the fever was caused by a cold, so I don't know if he's healthy or not, but maybe Nelson in game 3, Yamai game 4, maybe Kawhi in game 5.
Yeah.
Not exactly murderer's row.
Yeah, whereas on the other hand, we've got whoever the Hawks want to use.
Yeah, I mean, they've got Setsu, they've got Holton. I know those two are going to come next. After that, it depends on if they're down or not. If they're still down in the series, I don't know who they go to. I don't see Hiroki Yamada coming out there. I'm not sure about Sho Yamazaki. I don't know. Bing, bing, bing. I don't know who they go to if they're still trailing. Let's say they're down 3-1 by some chance or, you know. They're going to have to bring water back early, I think. I don't think they can go to either of those other guys.
Well, I think that's probably the answer. But I think we talked about the Hawks having 2 advantages.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we talked about them having 3 advantages, and one of them hasn't panned out, which was the bullpen. They haven't looked at Mahara hasn't been as good as anybody. Okay, so the next thing is the other advantage was, of course, the offense that's still there. The guys can still hit. And the third advantage has yet to play out in my position, which is the Hawks, the depth of starting pitchers.
Right.
I think they're going to go, and I think Holton's the best pitcher left in the series who hasn't pitched, and I think Setz is the next best pitcher who hasn't pitched.
I'd have to go with that, although I think Nelson, even though his record was so bad, I think he's a different guy at Nagoya Dome, but that's gonna be the same. The same
he's a good
be made
pitcher.
For Setsu, so at Nagoya Dome. So I think they're 1-1. But you know, the Dragons 44-22 at home, the Hawks 39-26 on the road. You throw all that stuff out since it's a short
plus
series.
Plus they do well at home.
But
didn't help much.
Right.
And the Dragons aren't a good road team.
They're not a good road team. So, you know,
so there you go.
You just never know what goes on in these short series. It's going to be fun to watch.
Exactly. Of course, the other thing about the Dragons and the Hawks, home and road, is that their stadiums are very similar.
Other than the ball not carrying so much at Nagoya Dome. But
right. But on the other hand, the wall's not 2005.
50 feet in the air, yeah. That's a stupid thing.
Five. It's about 30 feet in the air.
All right, well, it's too damn high. All right, anything else you have to say on that before we move on to...
I wasn't the only one who was surprised. I got a mail from an acquaintance of mine who is with the Hawks, and he said he seemed quite surprised that he hadn't won Game 1. So
yeah. Me too.
I wonder if this is symptomatic, you know, this whole idea that I think, how many people do you think picked the Dragon?
People who live in Nagoya who want to see him win. I mean, I didn't even pick him. And, a few bigger fans than I am. Okay, so... next topic is I wanted to talk about the Yokohama Bay Stars. We're going to talk about the Giants later on, too, if we have enough time. But looks like that managerial job is open to anybody who wants it. I saw on the net Monday that, former Giants star pitcher, and he was a Pittsburgh Pirates pitcher, Masami Kuwata, was up, or his name was being bandied about. He joins Tsuyoshi Shingo and former Giant star Warren Cromartie as names that have been thrown out there. And there have probably been some others. I think I heard Wayne Grassick's name mentioned.
Yeah, I think I heard that you're in line for the job, too.
And I was going to nominate Michael Westbay. So I think, you know, everybody who's got an opportunity. And I guess you don't need experience or too much experience. I don't know.
Like Arnold Schwarzenegger was elected governor of California. You know, everybody was on the ballot, you know, and the expression, you know, in California, the famous expression, what's your sign, was replaced for some months by how many votes did you get?
Okay. No, I have no recall. How's that?
Okay. Anyway, so the Bay Stars manager could be open for public vote. You know, that would get some fans' interest, you know,
get the fans into it, at least.
Yeah, but why not have an election?
I'm for it. I'm voting for Michael Westbay.
Ow.
Because he'd probably put me on the staff. It'd be cool to watch baseball games every night. So, you know, I could be a bench coach. Hey, steal. Hey, don't steal. Hey,
bench. Stay put.
But one of the recent reports said that Cromartie had thrown his name into the ring, so I reached out to him and contacted him, and we sat down for a quick interview. So let's take a listen.
Oh, crap.
All right, I'm here with Warren Cromartie. Wow, what a pleasure it is to talk to you, buddy.
Hey, good to be on your show, pal. And anytime I can spread the good word in Japan, I'm always looking forward to it.
All right, well, now you were here in, I guess the last year you were here was 1990.
Well, actually, it was 1990, my last playing days there with the Tokyo Giants. But after that, I came back a few times to do some television appearances and things of that nature.
I did see you on TV. And then after you finished your playing career, you managed the Japan Samurai Bears.
Yes.
And that was one season. That was the lone season that they played. Is that correct?
Right. It was an independent league for independent players, and it was in the Golden Baseball League where they traveled through the West Coast from Yuma, Arizona to Mesa to Chico, California.
Chico, the party
and,
school.
Party school. And managing the Japan Samurai Bears is a great experience as far as a manager. And having an opportunity to manage a Japanese player who got lost in a loophole, who got lost in the draft or whatever have you, given an opportunity to come to the United States and play in an organized league. Which was a great thing for them as well, getting some exposure along with myself as far as managing. But we were on the road for 90 games. We didn't have a home base, so we like got off the bus and played and for 90 games straight. So a little bit of a stretch. It was a great experience. The American players probably bitching and moaning about 90 days on the bus, but when you're dealing with Japanese and when you have a Japanese players. Mentality is different, so it wasn't as bad as it sounds. It was a great experience for all of us.
All the players were Japanese, or most of them, or some of them had Japanese
visas? Yeah, all the players are Japanese. We got them visas to come over, and first time that's ever happened. We play an organized league in the United States and independent league, so it was a great experience. We did a documentary out of it called Season of the Samurai.
Oh, really?
And yeah, you can go check it out on my website, warrencromartie.com.
All right.
And check out the trailer there, and you know, I'll send you a copy of it, and it was a great experience.
All right. Well, what did you learn, good and bad, from that experience?
Well, what I learned on the good part, as far as it brought back the love for the game that I always had, you know, being that close up to the game, coaching third base, and being a part of organizing and strategic style of play, and I learned how valuable communication is, and you know, being a player who's played all over the United States and played in different ballparks and things of that nature, you know, it was a great experience. I mean, the guys knew who I was, being a player for the Tokyo Giants. Some of the guys saw me when I was playing for the Giants. So, you know, you have that respect right away with that. And the good thing about it is I learned how to teach. I taught some kids who were having trouble sign a professional contract in Japan one way or another. They didn't get signed out of high school or didn't play pro ball.
Right.
They played semi-pro ball. So giving them an opportunity to learn their skills and get better at their skills and learning, teaching them in a very short time. Now, the bad part about it was we only had 3 months. You know, these players that I had for the Samurai Bears, I didn't choose the players. They were chosen before I came on as manager. So taking some Japanese players and putting them in a very high level independent league at that time, not knowing who I had. So it was a learning process from day one, watching them make all kinds of mistakes during the course of the year, then finally catching on toward the end of the year and, you know, earning some respectability. So every player on that team will tell you with the experience that they had was a tremendous thing. And that only goes to show if Japan will really stretch out their farm system instead of one farm system and find another way to add teams in their farm system, give opportunity for other kids to, you know, maybe make it on a pro team, maybe shine a little bit more, not be stuck in one pro team because, you know, there's, what, 400 or 500 high schools in Japan.
Right.
And not a lot of kids get drafted. So there's a lot of players that slip through the loophole there.
Now, what was your philosophy as a manager?
Well, I mean, it's preparation. Being accountable and having a winning attitude. You know, I mean, you have to believe in yourself that you can play, that you can. There's nothing wrong with making mistakes, but you're learning from your mistakes. And my philosophy is fundamentals. It's one step at a time. The game it will humble you in a very quick way if you don't learn the right fundamentals of the game. And my philosophy has always been, you know, we all have to think the same. We all have to think as one, and try as a manager for them to buy into what you're doing and what you're saying, and whether you want to be a running ball club or power hitting ball club, or you try to be a mixture of two. So you got to know what you have, and hopefully everybody from the front office all the way down to the minor league on the same page. Everybody's thinking as one, and believing in themselves they can win. I mean, you got to have that winning attitude. No matter how you've done in the past few years, in the past, you have to have the winning attitude. Maybe you've been losing for a lot of years and all, but, you know, the change of attitude and the philosophy, how you approach every game and go at every game, can turn things around. And you got to have that all in one, though. Everybody has to be thinking on the same page.
All right, now how much did you rely on, you know, Saber Matrix and a lot of statistics? Because I guess, you know, that's taken over baseball in recent years.
Well, in some sense it's taken over baseball. A lot of managers use the numbers. Some managers go on gut feelings. And I didn't use the Saber Matrix because of the team that I had. It was more like watching my Japanese players every day, learning about them and putting them in the best position for them to succeed in a very high-level league at that time. And some of those guys were not as good. Some were average. I did have one player to sign a pro contract, one pitcher to sign a pro contract with the Texas Rangers. From there, he had the highest ceiling. So with the numbers and everything, I try to match up when it comes down to it, see who's hitting off who and try to get the best chances to win. But, you know, with a little knowledge of the game and who you have as players, pretty much you have everything in front of you.
All right, now how much do you think that coaching plays a role, and how much do you think that it's the player ability that plays a role in wins and losses throughout a season?
I figure this. As a manager, you win, let's say, a major league manager in 162 games. How many games a manager maybe wins? Maybe a half a dozen to a dozen games in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and coaching plays a lot. And what the players win, the players lose, but usually falls back on the coaching. So, you know, like we were talking about earlier, about the philosophy and everything, how it comes down to the coaches and how they implement it
mm-hmm.
with the players. And like I said, everybody has to be on the same page. You have to be on the same page to develop a good winning attitude. So, yeah, a manager has a lot to do with it. Not only that he has a lot as far as making moves, put the hit and run on at the right time, or switching a player, bringing another player in. That means a lot. But most of the time, it's the players are the ones going to, you know, paint the picture for you, for a manager to do anything. Depending on what kind of players that you have also,
mm-hmm.
who can pretty much monitor themselves without any coaching intervening.
Now, this will be the last question. What did you learn in that role as a manager that you didn't realize when you were playing?
Well, I'm a emotional type player that played with a lot of emotions when I played the big leagues here and I went to Japan. You know, I helped them change the style of play along with myself and Randy Bass and the Boomer Wells and the Leron Lees, that type of thing, where we were all here during the 80s in Japan playing.
Uh-huh.
We changed the game. We made it faster. We created some excitement about it. I learned how patience it's a wonderful thing. Patience is a wonderful thing. How teaching and
keys, especially when you come to Japan, I'm sure you learned as a player just to try to be able to communicate and exchange ideas with your fellow players as well as the coaches.
Well, yeah, you know, because basically baseball is the same all around the world, okay? The distance between home plate and first base are the same, home plate and the mound is the same. The balls may be a little different, but pretty much three outs and 27 outs in a game. So, you know, when I first came there, it's more let my play do the talking instead of me, and then keep my eyes and ears open and trying to make the adjustment. My key was always making the adjustment, doing what the Japanese do, being able to adapt. So with that in mind, I put all that, my learning experience and my skills, and, you know, I didn't really have to go out there and tell them who I was because they knew who I was, mm-hmm. and they watched me play. So I tried to carry over with that with a mindset of a sensei.
All right, Warren, we appreciate you joining us. We'd like to have you back on another time, so stay by.
I appreciate it, too, and I hope to send me your coordinates so maybe I can listen to a show or something like that. You never know what may happen in the distant future. Stay in touch, okay?
All right, much appreciated.
Yosukete!
You too.
Yosukete! Arigato gozaimasu.
All right, arigato gozaimasu. Okay. All right, so yeah, you can tell we talked by phone, and it's the sound isn't that great, so I apologize. You know, we had to use an actual dial-up phone connection. Ugh, how 90s. But
you still have those?
I have one here. I have a landline at the house. But anyway, it seems like he's learned the joy of teaching and sharing knowledge, which is, you know, really, really useful tool for a manager. But, I mean, not a manager who's trying to win games, but a manager who's still teaching. You know what I mean? Like a minor league manager, maybe?
Well, that's the situation he was in. He was in a you know, a sort of a ragtag, build it, you know, make it by scratch team in the minor leagues, mm-hmm. independent minor leagues. So.
Mm-hmm. And this team, you know, I did go to the website, like he asked, and I did check out, you know, the Samurai Bears, and there was a documentary. I hope he sends me a copy, like he said he would. I'd love to see it. But here's the thing. He stressed a couple of points. One was fundamentals, and the other one was that he's learned a lot of patience. And,
okay.
You know, learning patience as a man in charge is a necessity. We all know that. But results can sometimes be circumstantial, right? Who's pitching, who's defending, who's calling balls and strikes, things like that. What's the weather? What park are you in? And doing the right thing leads to success more than often, but it takes a lot of patience to get guys going in the right, you know, all in the same direction. Now, can he do something like that with the Bay Stars? I don't know.
I would have to think he's a long shot. And I think he'd be a long shot for a Japanese team. His managing experience is fairly thin.
Mm-hmm.
That being the case, you know, some guys who never coached or managed have done very well.
True.
It's a guy who's, you know, be on his way to Nagoya tomorrow is in that category. He's done exceptionally well for a guy who's never managed or coached. And yeah, I don't know. I would, you know, to be honest, I'd love to see him get a chance. I don't think it'll happen, but he could. I think he has. I'd like to see what kind of game he could bring to the dugout. You know, what he could bring the Bay Stars.
Well, I mean, this team that he managed, it was 33-57, and it played all its games on the road, and that's actually not a bad record when you consider, you know, you didn't have much time to work with the guys. He didn't really know what he had.
Not only were they playing every game in the road, they were playing every game in a foreign country.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not that bad a record. And, you know, when I read Crow's book, Slugging It Out in Japan, an American Major Leaguer in Tokyo Outfield, that he wrote with Robert Whiting, I read that when I arrived in Japan in 1990. And that was a book that inspired me to get more into Japanese baseball. I think I read it in 1991, but I arrived in 1990. And, you know, it talks about the struggles that you have as a foreign person in a different country. So I know that he knew what his players were going through, and it's probably very helpful to have an American guy who had that experience to be on the bench with you. But, again, he kind of sounded like his team was overmatched, you know, talent-wise.
If he's the manager of the Bay Stars, he might have to get used to that to some degree. Now, the base, I don't really want to go too much into the Bay Stars because I'm not certain we can add anything that hasn't been said at this, you know, in the time constraints we have.
Right.
But it would be a challenge, and part of the challenge of dealing with the Japanese baseball team as a foreign manager is your liaison with the team.
Mm-hmm.
And how well you are integrated into the organization. And the advantage of having Cromartie as manager is that he's a name.
Yeah.
He's a name and he's splashy, but the downside might be, and this is no kick at Crow, because I'm very fond of him, and I was fond of him, you know, from the days when I came here and I was watching the games on TV and the Giants games every night on TV, is that it might come off as being a stunt.
Yes and no,
Because he's kind of a larger than life figure. So that's the problem, and I think that's a possible negative. And the thing, briefly what I would say is the real hard thing about being a manager is having a liaison and having the absolute bedrock that you are working with the organization and not stuck on the front of the hood like an ornament.
Yeah,
because a couple of foreign managers have had that experience where they were told basically win and, you know, get out and lead,
mm-hmm.
but they had no connection with the person who was driving the car.
Right. Well, you know, it was my, he was here, he arrived in the 80s, and he was leaving when I came to Japan, so I never really had interviewed him before, had never really spoken with him. But he doesn't strike me as the kind of person who would take that. He would say, okay, well, I'll stand in for that, even for one game.
Yeah.
I think he would say, hey, look, this is what I want to do. This is my plan. I've mapped it out. I've showed you where we are, where I want to go, and how I want to get there. And I think we wouldn't have to worry about that being the case. That being said, when you're looking for your first gig, you know, you're willing to bend some of your rules.
You have to compromise a little bit.
Yeah. So, they have a new owner. They have new ownership, the Bay Stars do, and maybe they want to take this thing in a different direction, and maybe to do that, they're going to take some chances. I mean, let's look at it this way. Everything they've done up to now has been a failure the past 5-6 years, except for when they finished third place.
As you know, when they were under Maruha and then when they were under TBS, they have had organizational difficulties.
Nice way of putting it, yeah. Yeah, it's true.
You know, they've had quality farm players, and they didn't know it. They left a lot of talent on the farm and made silly personnel moves, and then they have another issue. They have fundamental economic issues in terms of stadium rent. They can't really afford to play in the stadium they play in. Perhaps the new owners will change that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hard to see. It's so much easier if you're a Japanese organization, and I don't mean this as a knock against American managers, because I think actually having an American manager is almost an ideal situation if you can integrate him, if you're willing to integrate his ideas and you have a level of trust.
Mm-hmm.
Now with Marty Brown and Terry Collins, they were certain that trust existed. They were swayed by the sincerity of these people wanting to make big changes, but they wanted to make big changes on superficial levels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wanted a hood ornament, basically.
Yeah.
You know, look, we're modern. And they didn't want to really do anything within the system that was going to push the team forward, because they figured all they had to do was change the hood ornament.
Right.
And they both worked tirelessly to get around that. But the point is, your organization ain't going anywhere if you're clinging to the fundamentally flawed things you were doing before. Now, and what the point I'm getting to is, if you have a Japanese manager, you can integrate those issues much more easily. You don't have to work overtime to integrate them. You do have to work overtime to integrate the manager into the planning structure, but you don't have to work overtime. You don't have to work even harder to integrate a foreign manager and incorporate his ideas into the structure. It's just a matter of, if you want to keep it simple, stick with a Japanese manager. I think an American manager is the ideal situation, but it's the hardest. It's very hard to make work.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. By the way, the pitcher that Crow mentioned, who was picked up by the Texas Rangers, was his name is he was a pitcher named Keisuke Ueno. I was only able to find that. I don't know where he is now.
Remember Chase Gay Wayno? He was the he was a Yomiuri Giants minor leaguer.
Okay, well, I don't know where he is now, but I know that his contract was purchased by the Texas Rangers after that 2005 season with the Samurai Bears. Now, we want to touch on this quickly, and because it's been all over the news, and we've been laughing and having a great time with it.
We can't say that.
But it's a very serious issue. The Giants GM bad-mouthing a higher up. I guess
Mr. Tsuneo Watanabe, who's the
We don't have to explain the whole thing. I think the whole thing has been out there. All I can say is I think that this whole thing represents some problems that you know, a deeper problem that's been in the organization for a while, and I don't see it ending peacefully or quickly.
Peacefully, wow. Hope we don't need body bags. That would be messy.
Well, heads are going to roll. Maybe we just need a head bag.
Well, when you separate the head, the body bag becomes necessary, I believe.
I see what you're saying.
We both have experience with people running organizations without heads on their shoulders.
Uh-huh. Stumpy included. Anyway, yeah, basically you've got this bad-mouthing thing going on, unsanctioned press conferences being held.
What is up with that? Who knows?
Something you rarely see in Japan. Something you rarely ever see in Japan. Let's hope it gets settled quickly. And
now, when does the general manager come out and blow the whistle on the former owner, who is still the chairman of the parent company? Wow.
That's a question.
How do you smack the boss on the wrist?
It's a fluid situation because who knows how they're going to I mean, they've asked Kiyotake to apologize, you know, but they said they're not going to reprimand him. Well, then why would he apologize? I mean, it's just nutty. Anyway,
So follow the news on that one and let us know how it turns out because we might not hear about it where we work.
That's right. We might not ever hear about it. And even if we hear, we probably won't be reporting about it. So next week we will have a show, and I believe we're going to have a show before the MVPs are announced on the 27th?
First of December.
Okay, so we will have a show before the 1st of December, and then after that the computer is going in for repair, so it'll be at least 2 weeks before we have another show. And by that time, I'll be in California and out by the beach somewhere. Hopefully we'll get some Wi-Fi on the beach, and I'll record the show with you.
Wow.
Hey, it's Southern California. You never know, man. You know, find some jazz club somewhere. I can sit in there in the back where the music's not too loud and hit you on Skype, and we can get this thing done. Thanks a lot, buddy.
All right. Well, congratulations to the Dragons on their hot start to the Japan Series, and good luck to the Hawks. I hope they get their game together and give us something to really be shouting and screaming about next week.
We'll be expecting a good series. All right. You can send us an email at yakyujohn@gmail.com or look us up on our Facebook page and leave us a comment there.
And send in your questions. We need them. We live on them.
We need questions for the off season, and we will do our best to do diligent crack research to find the answers to the questions that. Did you say crack? Anyway,
that was not me. You can say crack. Don't worry.
We have a
as crack, an elite.
We have a crack research crew.
So. You're editing in your future, young man.
All right, guys. Have a good week. Enjoy your baseball.
Goodbye.